780 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbite. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Hi there, I am Nick Francesco. You are listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. And sitting with me,
Dave Enright.
And Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton on the buttons. And we'll be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard, I think. I never listened to the... You have to admit, though, that beginning music kind of charges you up.
Yeah, Doug, it really gets us going after sitting here for a few minutes, kind of, all right, figuring out what are we going to talk about.
No, we never do that. We always listen to him talk about sex.
No,
Steve Ray.
Yeah, you were listening to Paul Harvey.
Uh-huh.
All right, we're gonna first before
sure
we
he was.
Before we
I
get
had
your
some
call,
plan for you.
We're gonna find out what's going on in the world of Apple, starting with Steve.
Well, it's interesting. There's a German magazine, C apostrophe T. Not sure how to pronounce those German names.
Gemütlichkeit und Lebendehubendehaver.
Far from no
bless you. Thank you.
And they've published a report the Spec CPU 2000 processor benchmark, claiming that the latest dual G4s are a lot slower than Apple claims in their advertising, saying that in theory the PowerPC processor with 32 registers should be much superior to the x86, which has an antiquated stack structure and 8 registers. But a lot of their testing found that the G4 was slower than the Pentium 4. So it's interesting to see that depending on whose benchmarks you read, one side is always faster than the other.
Yeah.
Which is part of the problem with benchmarks is they can be optimized for a specific instruction set in a specific CPU so that they work really fast in this case on a Pentium, but since that the PowerPC is a different architecture and there's some fundamental differences in the Intel and Motorola architectures, that something may not work as well on the other side.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the benchmarks. So there's lies, damned lies, and benchmarks.
Yeah. There you go.
And the reality is that what's important is how fast your applications run on a day-to-day basis.
And that's why Apple usually publishes real-world performance. How fast can I get my Photoshop filters run? How fast can I get a Quark Express layout finished?
Right.
And that's usually where the Pentium comes up about it. And for those of you that remember, a couple weeks ago I had mentioned that there's a movie on Apple's site explaining the technical differences between the Motorola architecture and the Intel processors. We found that at the Myths, Apple Myths website, so we'll get that up on the link as well. Basically, the PowerPC chips have a shorter stack structure, so they can be more efficient than Intel's very long stack structure. So it's kind of dry, but a little interesting to read if you're into the technical geekery.
Yeah, BOFH put up a pretty interesting comparison. I forget which of the many forums that I do it was in, but it was a pretty interesting comparison between the various architectures, the Alpha chips and the Sun chips and Intel. Basically, what they've got going for them is they're cheap.
Right.
Yep.
And actually, when Microsoft used to make Windows NT for the PowerPC platform.
Right.
It blew.
I bet you people didn't know that.
Yep.
You used to be able to buy a PowerPC with Windows NT on it.
And it blew away the Intel side. It was almost as fast as the Alpha, which is a super fast chip
itself. It was ridiculously fast.
So fast so that Microsoft stopped developing for it because it made them look bad with their Intel partnership.
Hello? Well, it did because Intel is their big partner.
Yeah.
And they've
stopped the Alpha version, too.
You people lose out. You could be running Windows probably 15 to 20 times faster than you're running it now for about the same amount of money. Except that, of course, you're running on the Intel platform, and oh well for you. That's just how that
works.
You
lose.
Right. Dave, what's going on in the rest of the world?
Well, I first want everybody to sit down.
Grab something, folks.
Yeah, really. Microsoft screwed up again.
Who'd have thunk it?
That's why I had everybody sit down. Well, their great Xbox that they've been pushing has been getting quite a few complaints. Turns out that when you put in a game and go to play it, it scratches it and then makes it thus unusable. Over 600 units that started out in Japan were reported. They go ahead and put their games in there, and all of a sudden you know, it would make the game totally unusable. Traditionally, Gates' software stuck to selling a computer software, which in the event blames the fault on the device, but, you know, they're sitting there saying, you know, repairs to a game console is a straightforward, and Microsoft said yesterday it would replace any Xbox that were found to be defective. It would also exchange damaged DVDs and CD discs. So at least he's covering his butt this one and not saying, oh, no, it's something else. You must have maybe put it in wrong. And I mean, hello, how many ways are there to put a CD in?
Microsoft is actually a big hardware manufacturer. They are the number one manufacturer of keyboards in the world.
Ahead of Keytronic?
Ahead of Keytronic.
Wow.
They also...
There's some big keyboard companies.
They're big. Microsoft makes more of them. I don't know that they sell more of them, but
I
saw said they make them, I just realized. But I'm assuming they sell most of the ones they make.
Well, Microsoft also set the standard for scroll mouse with their scroll mouse. Now everybody else copies them with
Back in the 80s, they were the biggest manufacturer of CPM boards for the Apple II.
Yep.
And that's a kind of interesting statistic. Speaking of Microsoft, keep sitting. Microsoft has admitted that the patch it sent around just last week to plug the critical SNMP vulnerability. Remember we talked about that? There's an SNMP vulnerability. You need to patch your system. Well, the patch they sent out has the wrong files in it.
Oops.
It's an embarrassing admission for Microsoft because they're desperately trying to clean up their act, you know, regarding IT security and
trust us
and all that stuff. Microsoft did send out an email yesterday confirming the English and German versions of the update had errors. The company said on March 14th, 2002, Microsoft discovered that the English and German patches for Windows NT Terminal Server Edition contained incorrect files. We have corrected this error and posted updated versions of this patch for these languages. Microsoft has been working very hard to persuade the IT community that the perception of its software being riddled with bugs is not true. Attaching the wrong files to their own software update is not helping the cause. Last week, they were claiming that they were incapable of producing a version of Windows that did not have a browser in it. This week, they are admitting that they can't send out the right files in a patch. These are just black eyes for Microsoft. You know, any large company is going to have glitches and problems and stuff like this. But, you know, when one side of Microsoft is saying, trust us, we're the best, you can't do better than us, and the other side is saying, wrong files.
Well, they could have just released a new update and said, here's a new update for this fix. So it was nice that they at least admitted what was wrong in the old update.
Well, they didn't admit it as much as admitted when somebody confronted them with it.
Which is how it usually works.
Yeah, right. Well, that's, you know, goes right back to, you know, folks, you know, I make no bones about how much I love that operating system, ME, and folks sit there and say, well, what do you actually have against it? Well, just from the fact that Microsoft put out this product, and it was out on the market for what, maybe 6 months. I mean, the product was just out there for 6 months, and they already were announcing Windows 2000.
Yeah.
But no, Gates had to get out there and make sure that cash flow didn't come in. And he put a product out there that, one, there are no updates. He rushed it out there, and people have a lot of problems with it. Although I know there's some folks that it's running fantastic, no problem, and God bless you. What ticks me off about the product is it was a six-month gap product to put out there just so, you know, he didn't want anybody not constantly spending money.
Because 98 sounded too old.
Right. So he puts this out there, and like I said, 6 months later, he came out with Windows 2000, and the folks that got Windows ME didn't even offer them a free upgrade or a reduced upgrade.
Well,
so that's what ticks me off about it.
Right. Yeah, but how do you really feel? Don't hold back. Doggone it. I hate it.
I try not to.
Okay, we're going to try to wake Dave up because he's just too reticent here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on the universe's longest-running computer call-in, et cetera, radio show, Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. It's true. I am Nick Francesco, and I'm sitting here with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton on the buttons, and we are talking to Barry from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
Nate.
I'm running... It's an Internet Explorer question.
Yes?
I'm running it on a XP system.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a problem that whenever I go to a site that has a JPEG and I want to suck in that JPEG, it will only allow me to save it as a bitmap. Now,
JPEG,
there's a really interesting thing. When I open Internet Explorer, the very first JPEG that I try to suck in, that I can select JPEG, and in it comes. But anyone after that, for hundreds, it doesn't matter, will only show up as I can save it as a JPEG. Now, I swap over to, I got a 98 machine
a
networked, and of course it works okay there.
You mean as a BMP?
As a bitmap.
Right. Well, JPEG is a bitmap.
Well, but he means as a BMP.
BMP is a
It will only allow me to save it as a bitmap, and I don't want it that big.
Maybe in his file association?
No. If it works for the first one, let me suggest that there's... What you might want to try doing first is deleting all of your temporary files. What often happens is that there are some websites that download JavaScript files. Some of them will prevent you, for example, from viewing your source files. You know, you can go to view and source and see the source file.
Yeah.
There is a JavaScript that will prevent that. If you dump your cache, your temporary internet files, that capability comes back because the JavaScript is no longer running.
Okay.
And it sounds like what might be happening is some site you go to, and maybe even the first one you go to, is preventing you from saving things as JPEG. Although why?
It's not the site, because I can go to this. I can go to a site. I boot up my machine, go to a site, very first JPEG. Yeah, I can save it as a JPEG. Second one,
they're BMP.
And then from there on, it won't let me select it as a JPEG. It is a JPEG. You can see the extension at the site, but it only lets me save it as a bitmap.
Right. Do me a favor and try that.
Okay.
In the meantime, I'll look up some other things, but I don't have an answer for you right now.
Okay.
But I would start there.
What version of Internet Explorer?
6.
Yeah. See, that's one thing I wish they'd also add as a feature in under their tools. You know how you can set the number of days it clears out history? I wish they'd set up a little unit in there that I can clear out the temporary internet file, say maybe
after X number of days.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm doing for a workaround is working. I got a Windows 98 machine and I got it networked. And I can go there, and then I can just save it to the XP machine across the network.
Right. Try that, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
And we'll start there. Also, make sure, of course, you've got all the updates to Windows.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do.
Yeah, all right. We'll start there, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Our pleasure. Our next caller, Bruce from Henrietta. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Great. Hey, how are you?
Hanging in there. First, I'd like to let it be known to your vast listening audience that this coming Wednesday, March 20th, the IEEE Computer Society will be hosting a presentation by Stan Kaplan on creating swearless human-computer interfaces. And it's going to be held over at the Kodak Camera Club Theater in Building 28. It's the non-Kodakers called the Theater on the Ridge. And I emailed you guys a pointer to the announcement, so you can post it in your web page, which I think you have a very, very nice website.
Thank you.
And I was just curious if you know the resolution of the problem that people are having with AOL making long-distance phone calls.
They really haven't. I mean, they're still more or less trying to hope that that'll go away like a bad nightmare.
From what I've read, the Frontier is offering a six-month moratorium on paying those giant bills, and AOL is offering a free month of service for anyone affected by it.
The thing that AOL people need to do is to go in and make sure that they have changed their area code to 585.
Definitely.
And that all of the dial-up numbers they have selected are Rochester exchanges. When you initially set up AOL, you type in your area code, and in the case of 716, you got phone numbers in Niagara Falls, Buffalo, and Rochester. If you happened to pick a Buffalo phone number in your giant list of numbers, because you can pick more than one phone number, if your primary phone numbers are busy, it keeps going down the list until it finds one not. And the only thing we can think of as actually happening is that someone had a Buffalo number in their list and it started dialing it.
Well, I've told a number of my folks to do is pretend you're going to a new location, set up a new location as though you're in another city. So you say new location, and you put in the 585. That way you'll only see the Rochester numbers. You go ahead and select them, and you delete your previous location.
Just in case you might have the wrong phone.
Yeah, just in case. It helps eliminate a lot of confusion and everything
else. It is also certainly possible that when AOL said that the new Rochester numbers are 585, you log in, you've still got 716. It says, oh, my goodness. I have to get rid of these numbers and find some 716 numbers.
You know, one other thing is in their dial-up, in the under my computer, the dial-up dialer, you've got to go in there, and if you've got any settings in there, you might want to check
for 716.
Normally, they sit there and say, all right, when you're going to use this modem, what area code you're going to use? You got to go in there and change that also.
The big confusion is that AOL just dials the phone number you've selected. So that theoretically, there should be no way it could get misrouted to a Buffalo number. And that's where the confusion lies between Frontier and AOL. AOL is saying, well, our phone number, our software just dials. And Frontier is saying, well, yeah, but it dialed a long distance. And the consumer is stuck in the end.
Right.
You guys are always saying how you should patronize our local hardware sources. Maybe this is a plug for patronizing our local ISPs.
As far as I'm concerned, if you're going to get an ISP, you should get a local one. But the problem is that a lot of people are not interested in getting to the Internet through their phone line. They're interested in getting to AOL through their phone line.
Yep.
You don't get another choice if what you want is the AOL content. For anyone who is strictly using AOL to get to the Internet, you're doing yourself a disservice. AOL is slower than a regular Internet service provider in almost all cases, simply because they have so many millions of people on their computers.
And basically, they're not an Internet service provider.
No, you're going through their back door.
It's a proprietary service that gives you links to the Internet. AOL actually started before the Internet became so popular.
Right.
So they had their own system, their own networks, their own computers set up. They link you to the Internet, but it's sort of a roundabout long way. You've got to get in line behind their 20 million other people.
Right.
And get to it. A lot of people like the easy interface of AOL.
Yeah,
which
and the buddies list. And
right,
all that
is so popular. Although AOL is now starting to offer high-speed access in Rochester, and there's some confusion there because they offer both DSL service that contracts through Frontier and cable service that contracts through Time Warner, but AOL is owned by Time Warner. So you have different...
Actually, it's the other way
around
now, yeah. They've merged. AOL is first in the list. AOL
pretty much owns Time Warner.
Yep.
How that
so
works.
It's interesting that different departments of the same company are competing with each other and allowing competition with other companies for the same service.
Right, but if what you want is the AOL content, then you're stuck with AOL. If what you want is the Internet, you should get any one of the many fine local service providers that you're absolutely right, Bruce. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Have a great time. Our next caller is Victor from Rochester. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm running Windows 98 Second Edition and Internet Explorer version 6. To keep my computer private as possible, every night I empty the history and I run the disk cleanup to get rid of all the Internet temporary files.
Sure.
But now on the location bar history, I noticed that some of the sites are deleted, and yet there's still some sites on there. Is there any way to delete selectively or totally delete the sites on?
Does Window Washer do that? You might want to take a look at a product called Window Washer.
Yeah, very well might.
Which I believe we have up on our site.
Okay. How many days do you have to keep the history?
That. Well, I do it every day. I mainly delete it every day.
Well, I mean, you can go into Internet Explorer and under Tools, as far as the number of days to keep the history, you can just tell it to say zero.
Well, I've done that, but it's still on the...
Sometimes it ignores you anyway.
Yeah.
I've even seen in some cases the disk cleanup doesn't really clean it up, and you need to manually go into the Tempranet files.
Tempranet?
There's a word there. And manually delete the files yourself.
Tell you what, we'll put up a link to that. We'll put up a link to both Window Washer and a program called Cookie Pal, if I can find it during the break. And you should try running both of those and see what you get. Okie doke. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Where? Oh, right here.
Over here.
Steve Gray, Dave Enright. Rob Linton on the phones, and believe it or not, it's Ray from Hi-Hi Falls. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
Hi there, gentlemen.
Came in. I was just saying, somebody come in?
What's that now?
Who came, when somebody says, thank you, gentlemen, we always say, who came in? It's a three-stage thing. Go ahead.
All right. Listen, I've got I'm running a computer that's becoming a dinosaur. It's Windows 95, 266 megahertz processor. And what I'm finding is that I'm having a real problem with systems resources being gobbled up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What I've attempted to do is I begin to run this thing. Now, I fired it up before I called you, and I tried to eliminate as many icons on the taskbar as I could. It usually starts up with five, and I get rid of three of them.
Mm-hmm.
I had 75% systems resources.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, it'll go down to as low as about 63%, and when I'm online, it really bogs things down. I'm running the infamous AOL.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what is causing all these systems resources to be chewed up so badly.
There are a whole bunch of things that cause this, Ray. The first thing is the icons running in the system tray. You're right about that. There's also the number of icons you have on your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you have a picture in the background. The number of fonts you load at the beginning. And then every time you open a window, it uses up some system resources
memory
to point
leak.
To that window. What's supposed to happen is when you close that window, you're supposed to get the memory back. The reality is that no version of Windows that's based on DOS is at all good at giving you back that memory. That's called memory leak. Eventually, you run out of that resource space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the big problem is that resource space is only 64K in size. I don't care how much memory you have, that resource pointer space is only 64K. So you could have gigabytes of RAM, or as our announcer says, gigabytes of RAM, but eventually you will run out of RAM.
Then one of the big issues is that letting those all those programs start up and then closing them after you finish booting makes it worse. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is go into your startup group and your startup items and prevent those programs from loading in the first place. In your system tray,
right.
So that it doesn't start the memory leak to begin with.
But even so, the fact, and of course, when you open AOL, you get multiple windows. So what you want to do is, I'm afraid you're going to want to move to a newer version of Windows. And,
yeah,
and that's probably a new computer at the same time.
I just say, the way the prices on systems are dropping, unbelievable right now, because the holiday sales were way below expectation. You know, they just didn't even come close to hitting their marks. Right now, they've got great sales going on that you can pick up systems for dirt cheap.
Although Alan Greenspan did declare the recession over.
That's right. So hurry and get it before everybody else notices and raises the prices again. So my suggestion is that when you do go out and get a new machine, that you buy XP, because that's really the only home usable version of Windows that is not based on DOS.
And doesn't leak as bad.
Well, it does, but the system heap, that 64K space that you fill up, that's actually much bigger in Windows, so you notice the leak a lot later.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I opened up the Control-Alt-Delete window on my desktop. And there's about 8 or 9 different things running on that. Does that stuff all load up as you boot up your computer?
Yeah, it does. And don't delete that stuff.
That's
all Windows programs running in the background that actually make the system run.
And part of the trick is knowing what those things are.
Right.
For example, like HP printers load in their HP print monitor, so the printer can tell the computer I'm out of paper. Well, if you can see that your printer's out of paper, you don't need that part running. So that becomes an issue of going through your Win 95. You can't run that.
Yeah, 95. Yeah, 95 is no longer supported. That's the other wall he's up against.
There's no MS config to help you turn those things off that you're not actually using.
Right. Under any set of circumstances, you're going to need a new operating system, and the 266 is really not going to run on any of the currently available operating systems satisfactorily.
Time for a new system.
I was going to ask you if it has enough horsepower left to maybe run that second edition of Windows 98.
Yeah, you could, but how much memory?
You mean RAM?
Yeah.
160 megabytes.
Yeah, you can do it.
Okay, maybe that would help.
But it's not going to help you a lot.
No.
Because that's based on the same stuff that 95 is.
DOS.
You're going to get the same resource problem because it's the same code.
I see.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Thanks.
I appreciate your time. Take care.
Thank you very much. Sometimes the answer is you just got to, the price of poker keeps going up.
I've been finding the biggest thing is fonts. People don't realize how many fonts their programs install. Open your font folder, delete them all. Just pick the three or four you want.
95 is notorious for not handling them correctly.
Our next caller, Lois from Rochester. Welcome, Lois. What's your question?
Well, I had more of a comment in regards to that AOL situation.
Sure.
Actually, it's a twofold observation. I'm a local ISP user and definitely encourage that. But regardless to that point, if you have caller ID through Frontier, anyone that's calling in the so-called 585 area code now is still showing up as 716.
We're in what's called the permissive dialing period, where both area codes work.
Right, so how did that occur? And secondly is that everyone thinks that AOL is like it for national ISPs or internet service providers in general.
Mm-hmm.
You've got AT&T, Earthlink, Juno.
Right.
Why aren't their customers complaining?
That's another issue, that if you're looking for an internet service and you travel a lot, you want one that has phone numbers in other cities.
Yep.
And
right, but if there was a transfer problem because of the area code switch, then you would have seen it in all of the other national.
And pretty much.
That's a lovely point, Lois. It clearly is. What Lois is essentially saying is that it's not Frontier's problem, or the Earthlink, AT&T, and Juno people would be having exactly the same complaint.
And instead, AOL is trying to push the financial burden of that back to their customers.
You're absolutely right, Lois.
Logic would dictate that all you have to do is use your head and go after them.
And
Lois,
much,
I love it when our listeners are smarter than we are. God bless you.
Thank you.
And pretty much all of the national services that have local phone numbers use the same local bank of phones. Because I go to a bunch of different clients, and some use Earthlink and AOL, and they're all the same phone number.
And it wasn't all over the city. It was only, a few here, a few there that, it happened to. It's not like it's widespread.
Right, right. Our next caller, Dave from Rochester. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
I have a couple quickies. I don't really use Internet Explorer, but I have 5.0 now. Should I bother going to 6.0?
What do you use instead?
Netscape and Opera.
Be happy and God bless you.
Okay. I'm interested in learning QBasic. Is that done in DOS?
Oh, whoa. You're going to learn QBasic from whom?
Well, I found some instructions on the Internet.
Yeah, that's pretty much where you're going to learn it. It is an old version of BASIC that is fast and powerful, but runs under DOS and is not only not supported anymore. I wouldn't even know quite where you'd find a new version.
So it's not useful in learning.
No, and that's too bad because it really was a heck of a language.
Yeah, I'm looking at Visual Basic too. I'm looking to get into beginning programming. What should I be doing?
Well, it depends what you want to do in the long run. Do you want to do internet type, web type stuff, or do you want to do PC, write PC programs?
Actually, to start off with, I'd like to, even with Visual Basic, make a command button that says, if I press this, then. It's going to open this program and execute. And if it opens this, it's going to execute
Visual
that.
Visual Basic script Visual Basic is probably where you want to be then. If you're going to write Windows stuff, then Visual Basic. You don't really sound like you need...
Pascal or C or C++.
And a lot of it is just getting the fundamentals down of how to program. And then you can pick up other languages really easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
What they call a top to bottom coding.
On the other hand, if you're really hot for QBasic, QBasic.com, the home of QBasic, on the Internet.
Okay.
Is that cool or what? And you can get all the files and tutorials and Q&A. And
that will work in DOS or no?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, it'll work in DOS.
DOS is not dead yet.
How cool is this? I used to be a big QBasic fan. I have to go and look.
Okay,
thanks. You so much.
I wrote my first terminal program in QBasic so I could get onto the Internet to get into the old FidoNet.
Yep.
Sure. I wrote my first one in Forth to do the same thing on the old Apple II. Great.
And I started with AppleSoft Basic because I'm a little bit younger than you guys.
Sure, sure.
Off your nose with a rubber hose.
I remember AppleSoft Basic, but we used to just go right into the monitor and program in 6502 assembler.
Yeah. I used to binary shape tables when I was writing my game.
Yeah. My boss at the computer center did hand-coded 6502 assembler in his head. He would just sit at the monitor and type 6502 code out of his head. It was the most frightening thing I have ever seen in my life. Secunder, if you're listening, I love you, but that scared me.
I can remember when we used to have to do assembler on the punch cards.
Yeah.
That ticked me off. I'm quick running down the room to get it in so that I can submit it for the program, and you drop all those cards.
You've never seen anybody as frightened as a guy in the back of a motorcycle with six boxes of punch cards, and they all go.
Oh!
And they all go.
We use punch cards to take notes with.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, we're going to whip the child now, and during that, we'll let you listen to some commercials. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Nick, Rob on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. And Rob Linton. Let's not forget Rob Linton on the button.
He takes good care of us.
He does. Before we go back to the phones, however, we're going to talk about our website. You can get to our website by going to wham1180.com. And from there, you get onto the main page, go down to the lower left, and you will see our smiling and not totally unattractive faces. And from there, you can get to our website at soundbites.org. At our soundbites.org website, you can vote in our poll. We have a poll every week. And please, please, if you have any ideas for a poll, send them to me. We have our last poll from Paul
Deering.
Where
do they send them?
The poll ideas at soundbites.org. And we have our last poll from Paul Deering, who hasn't watched the show since we moved. And this one is, the new one is about what is likely to become of your computer when you replace it. And the choices are, I'll keep it, I'll sell it intact or in parts, I'll pass it along to a friend or family member, I'll donate it to a worthy cause, and replace it, I still haven't found the any key. So far... That's very funny.
Yeah.
I kind of had to last a little bit, but that's okay. So far, we seem to have a total of 59 votes, and I'll keep it as winning by a small margin. So please vote in the poll. While you're there, check out the Soundbites forums. We have a set of forums where you can ask questions, chat with people about computers stuff and non-computer stuff. You do need to register, but the only reason we ask you to register is because we find that when anonymous cowards post, they post rude things. So now you have at least some reason to be you, and you can post stuff in the Soundbites forums. Please, when you do post, please put your city and state that you're from so we'll
We're
know
just
how
nosy
far
and signal is getting.
Yeah. Right. We don't keep any of that information. We don't ask you for your address or any of that stuff. Just city and state so we know where we're going.
We've been finding we have a lot of listeners across the pond in Toronto.
Yes, we do. It's pretty interesting. And across the
Illinois.
Pond in England. We've got there's a heck of a skip going out there somewhere. In addition, of course, you should take a look at our FAQs and links down in the lower right, including the websites that we mentioned on the show today will be linked there. Last week's poll was, what screensavers do you use? A total of 298 votes. And once you have voted, then you can go to the poll archives and look at the old polls. And you'll find that the ones that came with my machine won by with 38%. Which was about 10% more than the next, and it goes down from there. So check us out at www.sound. We actually don't need the www. Just soundbites.org.
Well, we're gonna go. You do it so we've done it for so long that you need the www.
Yeah,
it's just a hard habit to break.
It is a hard habit to break. Our next caller is Mike from Hilton. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Man. Yeah. It was a little bit of a wait, but I guess it was worth it. I learned a little bit there.
Sure.
I'm looking at a DVD recorder.
Ah.
Whoa.
There's so much convoluted information about this DVD recorders. That it's
and all of it is just slightly wrong.
Yeah.
And basically there's five mutually incompatible standards.
Yep.
Yep, I heard that already.
Now, the trick is if you want to make a DVD movie to play on your television, the best format to use is DVD minus R.
DVD minus R, huh?
Right.
And whose glorious recorder will do that? All of them, or?
Well, the minus R is most common for video format and most compatible with television. There's also a plus R format, a minus RW, and a plus RW. The RW formats are convenient because you can erase the discs and write to them again. That's the big difference. Minus RW, you erase the disc and write on it again. The plus RW, you can rewrite to it on the fly. like a floppy disk.
Well, I'm looking at digital video because I got a digital video camera.
Right. If you want to make a movie, you need to find a drive that does DVD minus R, and that's the most compatible for watching on DVD players.
DVD minus R is the one that you're recommending.
Well, one thing, though, Mike, I would suggest, you know, like they say, you can always tell the Pioneers. They're the ones that have the arrows in their back.
In fact, Pioneer makes one of the better DVD recorders.
But right now, if your luck is like mine, you know, I'd sit there and buy, whether it was debating between a VCR or Beta, you can guess which one I would have gone with and been stuck with it and sitting there all alone. But I'd wait until the standard, you know, a little more falls out. They are so new that, you know, you might want to wait just another month or so. If you don't have to have it right away, and like anything else, the price will probably drop too.
Yeah. And a lot of the drives are multiple compatible. The DVD minus R and DVD minus RW are commonly put together, and the plus R and plus RW are commonly put together in a single drive. Hopefully, one of these days they'll all be put into one drive. And then to complicate matters even more, there's a new...
Did he leave?
No, I'm here.
Elvis has left the building. The current DVD players use a red laser, and there's a proposed standard that was actually just defeated this week to use a blue laser and increase the capacity up to 20 gigabytes on a disc. The standards committee rejected the proposal because they don't want to have another competing standard yet.
Right. That's next year.
Right.
I can't... See, that's... It's just it's so muddy that you can't see your way through.
If you're buying it right now for the purpose of creating DVDs that you can play on your television, get a DVD minus R.
And that's the best way to go. And Pioneer looks like they got that.
You got it.
So that's the way to go. And it seems like, you know, boy, if you ever take your tapes, or if you guys got camcorders,
right?
You know, they sit on the shelf.
Right.
And it would be so nice to be able to sit there and go, oh, yeah, look at this. This is my last year's,
Right. That's the thing to go for, DVD minus R.
There it is. Well, thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Very much.
Sure, our pleasure.
Day.
Thank you. Our next caller is Doug from York. Doug.
Yes.
York,
hi.
Where?
York, New York.
York, New York.
Where is that?
Beautiful downtown York. Down between Caledonia and Mount Morris, Geneseo area.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's up?
Got a question for you. I'm still using the Media Player 7.
Yeah.
And I keep getting the little blurbs to update to 8. I know you guys have said a number of times that Microsoft is enjoying finding out who you are and what you listen to and watch.
Right.
With that. But is that still a problem with 7? Did 7 have that capability?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. So that's still happening even with using 7.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Didn't they say they were going to stop it, though, in the next version?
Yeah.
As soon as they found out about it.
Yeah, as soon as somebody told them. Yeah, they didn't know.
Hmm.
But, yeah, 7 does it, 8 does it. You know,
and probably 9, 10, 11, 12.
Probably.
I don't view any videos anymore on my Windows box. No. I do it on my Linux box. I don't care.
Ah, okay. Now, I tried putting Real Player on before. I used to have Real Player on.
That's even worse.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
It really is. It's.
Well, from a programming standpoint, it doesn't do the spying like Microsoft does.
No, but it's just a bad piece of code. It's a great standard.
Mm-hmm.
But the code is big and sloppy, and they add all kinds of other junk to your system, and they take over in a lot of ways that don't make me happy. I'm just not impressed. None of the media players that you can get from the big companies right now, even Apple, you know, if you don't buy it every single time you run something, it says, do you want to upgrade to Pro right now, right this second, before you see your video?
Mm-hmm.
No, maybe I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the first time during a boot.
No. Every single time I view something, I see
check
this.
Check out my window. It's different on the Mac side. You only get it once a day.
Yeah, of course.
So what would you recommend then for a media player?
GTV runs on runs on the Linux. They're all, you know, you're going to have to live with whatever you're going to have to live with. Right now, media player is the least obtrusive in terms of getting in your way while you're actually trying to look at a video, but the most obtrusive in terms of sending information to Microsoft.
Okay.
And unfortunately, you pretty much need 4 or 5 different media players for all the different types of media that come out on the net.
Right.
Because none of them can play the other ones.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Although QuickTime 6, that is currently in licensing issues, can also play some of the Real formats. So they're starting to merge a little bit.
Mm.
Okay. But so just listening, say, to MP3s, probably not a big deal, but more of the videos and all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in general, that's true. There's also a new standard called Ogg Vorbis. There's already a link on our website to that.
Yeah, I just saw that on your website.
And
yeah.
The media player there is not, in fact, it's open source, so everybody knows what's in the code, and it's all pretty clean. So you might want to give that one a try.
Okay.
Okie doke.
That sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you so much. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, it is Nick Francesco. It is Dave Enright. It is Steve Ray. It is Rob Litton on the buttons. And Bob from Pittsburgh on the line. Welcome, Bob. What is your question?
Hi. I have a Macintosh, the original G3. I think it's 233 megahertz, and I'm wondering if that thing will run OS X. I'm up to 9.2, and wondering if it will run it, or do I need to upgrade something else?
It will, but you may not be happy with the performance. It's a little slow. They're they're recommending a 300 megahertz, but really the G4 runs OS 10 the best. How much memory do you have?
I have a lot. I'm like 300 and something.
That's not a lot. That's minimum.
Oh really?
Yeah. 512 meg is best for OS 10, and again, more is better.
The price of poker keeps going up, Bob.
Yeah.
And you got to ante up if you want to stay in the game.
Only a year and a half old, or maybe 2 years.
No. A year and a half is not only anymore. The reality is, if you can actually purchase it, it's obsolete.
It's obsolete. And there's been, four or five different revisions of the G3 and G4 line since that machine came out.
You know you want the new iMac, Bob.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I sprung for a big disk, and I got a USB card, and so on and so on.
Yeah, that's been a problem for a few years on both the PC side and the Mac side, that you can upgrade your machines, but by the time you do, it would have been cheaper to buy a new one in the end.
Yeah.
Right.
And we actually have some stock of the new iMacs at Jesse Group. Our waiting list is over, and they're still trickling.
Are they shipping now? Are the new iMacs out?
The SuperDry version has been shipping for... a couple of months, in quantity, about a month. We're starting to get the middle version that has the DVD player, and then the entry-level model with just the CD writers due out next month. Basically, the difference is, do you want to make discs? You go for the entry-level model. If you want to watch movies, it's the middle model. If you want to make movies, it's the top end.
Hmm. And any early read? Are there bugs, or should we wait a few months? Or
nothing so far we've seen. They've been very good.
Great. Well, it sounds like that's in my future.
There you go.
And then you can answer our poll this week and decide what to do with your old machine. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Thanks. Our next caller is Don from Fairport. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Hey, I'm looking at building my own computer for the first time. I've got a old Socket 7 where the old Houston ship finally gave out, and now I'm not able to write on my floppy drive.
Man.
I beg your pardon?
Go ahead. No, we're just for it.
Yeah, we're just reminiscing.
We're reminiscing, yeah.
Oh, okay. And, anyway, what I've decided to do is I wanted to build a new AMD Thunderbird or
Duron?
No, the next step up from the Duron, but the XP.
The XP chips.
And I've been looking at the different motherboards. I've been seriously considering the A-bit, but I started talking with a fellow, I guess, at a computer shop somewhere, and he's telling me, oh, no, don't go near an A-bit. You know, AMD doesn't even recommend those things. And he's saying, you know, stay with what AMD recommends, and there's all sorts of compatibility issues.
There could be on some motherboards. You might want to just go right to AMD's website, and they've got recommendations, you know, because... their chips will cause some problems with some of these newer boards, especially the XP chips. So you might want to go with their recommendation. You know, I mean, it's not one or two boards. The list is quite lengthy.
Okay.
There's so many variations in motherboard design. Right.
And you're throwing so many other variables into it. It's not like the old days when there was just the box, 2 5-and-a-quarter floppies, and a keyboard. Mm. I mean, you're throwing scanners, writers, all kinds of peripherals now onto these machines, and they've got to all work together. So, you know, you don't want to be building this box, adding these other devices, and then all of a sudden you start getting glitches because you wanted to stick with one particular board. and it might not play well with the rest of the devices. So I would definitely go to AMD's website, look at their recommendation. Gigabit is a good system, motherboard, ASUS. I mean, you can go on.
Tyenne. I love it.
Okay. So go and look at their list.
All right. Yeah, because one thing I've been concerned about is are some of these integrated, the integrated sound cards, video cards. I like the individual cards that I have to install.
I'm with you. Especially with the new ATI GeForce 4.
Yeah.
128 mega memory on it. It's unbelievable.
There's a really great website for finding information on PC hardware, Tom's Hardware.
Okay.
And a lot of reviews and real-world user experiences with the different types of motherboards and systems.
Yep. And we'll put that up on the website, too.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Our next caller is Art from Rochester. Art, talk to me.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
Very good. Yourselves?
Good.
That's good. I got a stumper for you.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Doing a little web development here. I upgraded my software. I'm using Dreamweaver UltraDev.
Right.
And by the way, I'm running on a Mac. It's a PowerBook. And, I do need to up the ante on mine as well. I'm looking forward to one of those new iMacs.
They're very cool.
They are. So anyways, I'm running OS 8.6, and when I upgraded, I can see some of the graphics in the program, some of the images, and some of them I can't. And it's not a path issue. And I tried it out on the iMac upstairs, and that's running 9.1, and everything works fine up there. So I'm wondering if you had any ideas or suggestions, anything I might try.
Are the spaces blank where the graphics should be, or is it just ignore it completely?
It shows a broken image symbol as if it were there was a path issue, as if there was a problem with the path.
Have you checked Macromedia's website to see what their minimum requirements are? They might have raised it to OS 9.
Well, I did, and I also checked their the manual as well, and it shows it in there that it's 8.6, and I talked to their support. And they were just as stumped as well, and that's why I figured I'd give you guys a call. No luck on their end working through them.
What about their user forums? A lot of times that's where you find the best information is from other users.
Yeah.
Good suggestion. Good suggestion. And actually, I did post a message on there. I should go back and take a look at that. I didn't see any results, and it is quite a...
Can you try to isolate what kind of graphics aren't showing? Is it maybe differences between JPEG and GIFs and PNGs maybe?
No, it's doesn't matter what it is. And what's interesting is it alternates. The one on top will show and another one in the middle won't. And
what it sounds like is you might not have enough. How much RAM do you have?
That's 192 meg on the drive.
How much have you allocated to UltraDev?
Good question. I haven't.
Thank you.
Usually I'm pretty good about that. Probably about 40 meg or so, but I can bump it all the way up to
a little more. I suggest you bump it way up, see if that clears it up.
That's a good idea.
Thank you so much.
Good suggestion. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks.
All right.
Okay.
One for Nick.
Just for that, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes while I gloat. I'll be going to gloatingdance.com, and we'll be back with Dave, Steve, Rob, and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Kind of dark alley someday. We're back.
What else is there to know except computer?
That's right. I think, therefore, I compute. We are talking to Tim from Irondequoit. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hello, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I really enjoy the program.
Thank you.
You dig me out of some holes once in a while.
That's our job.
Well, I had an older computer that I had upgraded. It had the original sound card plus the one that was on the board. I can play audio CD. I can get sound and such from any programs that I run, but I cannot get any sound on the internet. If I try to play any MP3s or anything like that, or any websites that have sound, I get nothing.
That's weird.
What are you using?
Which browser?
Microsoft stuff.
Microsoft Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
What version?
The latest.
6.0?
Yep.
Do you have sound turned on?
Turned on where?
If you go into Tools,
okay,
and Internet Options,
okay,
the last tab, whose name I don't remember. Well, no, this is not the latest version.
Yeah, there's options to turn off pictures and sounds.
It's probably
and
advanced.
Animations.
Right.
To make it run faster.
But you mean where all those little check mark boxes are?
Yeah. There are choices for playing sounds, playing animations, play videos, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, I just found them, yep.
Under multimedia, make sure sounds are turned on there.
Okay.
Okie doke.
That I will check.
It also might mean one of your plugins isn't quite working. Most of the media formats need a plugin in order to play properly. Theoretically, if you don't have the plugin, it should tell you that.
Right. But it may be a damaged plugin. The other thing you should do is go into Tools and Windows Update. An update is Internet Explorer, if there are any updates for that.
Okay, I'll try those two things.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
bye.
Tim. We're going to stick with Tim, but we're going to go to Victor and talk to him there. Welcome, Tim.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm going to switch phones, okay?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Folks, before you call, make sure that you've got some idea. I don't know. Not at all.
No?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay, good. Hey, I'm sure you've heard this question a million times. Which is faster, Lightning Link or Roadrunner?
Yes.
Yes, they're both fast.
The difference is so minimal.
I'm about 300 yards from the switch for DSL.
What it comes down to is distance to the switch for DSL and the number of people on your head end at any one time for Roadrunner, and the number of people in your local switch and your local CO for
I've got
DSL.
Him beat, though, now.
Yeah, you do.
I am literally 4 feet from the switch.
And?
And I love it. It's fast.
One thing that's frustrating is that when you see the advertisements for both...
they both lie.
Right. The one thing that
well, they both exaggerate.
Yes.
The one thing that most annoys me about Lightning Link is they say it's not shared like Roadrunner is. Mm. It is shared.
The whole internet is shared.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they're shared at a slightly different point. With Lightning Link, you have a line from you to the central office, and there it gets shared. With Roadrunner, you have a loop, basically, in your neighborhood to the head end. And there it's shared. So they are both shared in both places. And most of the time, it isn't your end of the connection that causes slowdowns. It's somewhere along the way and at the other end.
And the reality is, I'm on a super fast computer. I'm on a gigahertz machine with a 100 megabit connection to a fiber optic to a T3. Mm-hmm. To an OC3. So I've got the fastest pipe you can get to the internet.
And when's most the OC45 coming in?
Oh, yeah, they got that. But don't do that again, whatever that was.
Oh, that hurt.
Sorry.
The reality is that my connection at home is just about as fast as the one at work, because what's the problem is the other end. The internet is slow. The internet is full.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how your machine is set up, because you can tweak your machine to be a little faster for downloads, but for huge file downloads, but then mail and smaller file downloads are going to be slower, or you can tweak it the other way. And whether or not you have a PCI card or an old ISA card, or how much, if you're running a Mac, how much memory you've allocated to certain applications. So,
and how old the wiring in your house? You say the squirrels would eat your wires every year?
Every 2 years, no matter what happens, they chew through the cable wire. So every other spring, my internet access and my cable quality drop down to almost zero. They have a standing order now. They don't even bother to call. Just every spring, every other spring, they come out and replace all my wires.
Well, I travel every day, through my work, and I travel from people's houses to home to home to home, and I've seen both Roadrunner and DSL, in a wide variety of situations and distances and everything else. And be honest with you, I can't see really a big difference.
They're now, both there is slower a difference than you want them to at
right,
some point.
Right. Yeah. There is a difference between first strike and full Lightning Link.
No, I would go full Lightning Link.
Right. But as long as you're going full Lightning Link versus full Roadrunner, it's max nix.
One of them claims 3 megabits per second.
That's maximum speed.
Theoretical.
That's like you can buy a car that'll do 250 miles an hour. Where are you going to drive that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll do 3 megabits. I can do 100 megabits at work. So what?
And that's, you only see that sort of, and Roadrunner advertises 2.5 megabits. You only see that speed if you're downloading something from inside the local loop.
Uh-huh.
So from
and how often do you do that?
Right.
Never.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you go to the...
Unless I'm downloading stuff from you guys.
No. Sound bites and Ask Nick and the Gloating Dance PC, Android PC.com and JesseGroup.com are all hosted at national providers.
Oh, okay.
Soundbites.org is and AskNick.com are actually hosted in Philadelphia at the network access point.
That's
there.
Where I think I am now.
Yeah. And so, that's not going to be any different. That's as fast as you can get.
So how do you decide which to go with? They cost the same.
Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
Some people hate Time Warner. They go with Frontier. Some people hate Frontier. They go with Time Warner. It doesn't, whatever makes you happy.
Well, I mean, either one you can set it up to come on either like your cable bill or your existing phone bill.
One thing that I've seen used as a difference is whether your phone lines and or cable TV lines are underground or not. So if you have underground cable lines but above ground phone lines, there's more chance of your phone getting knocked out, so go with Roadrunner.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And again, it depends on the wiring in your house.
Everything's above ground.
If your house wiring for your phone is kind of old,
mm-hmm.
then I would suggest you go with Roadrunner because you're going to get a better signal out of newer wires.
Actually, I talked to Roadrunner, and they said that they would come out and run a fresh cable from the where cable comes into the house.
You can't beat that.
They were saying, you know, Radio Shack cable is just not going to be as good as what they have, and they would run me a fresh cable.
I actually had to have the guy come back to my house and rerun from the house to the main pole about after a couple of months because my signals were so low.
Yeah.
Really?
They came and found filters in the box out on their pole that they had no idea what they were doing. They just took them all out. My whole signal got infinitely better after they did that. But, whatever makes you happy. Sorry.
All right.
It's back to you, Tim.
I'll just flip a coin.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Get two computers, buy one of each, and see which one works better for you.
There you are. Our next caller, Cassie from Rochester. Welcome, Cassie. What's your question?
Hi. I appreciate your taking my call, and I hope you can help me out.
Me too.
Your show's really great. I'm a computer dummy, I should warn you. So anything I get from your show each week is great. It enlightens me a lot.
That is why we're here, Cassie.
Okay. This is kind of what happened this morning. I feel like I have two strikes against me before I even talk to you. I have a Dell computer I bought within the last year,
mm-hmm.
and it came with ME, and it also came with free AOL.
Yep. Sure.
So that's what I use.
Mm-hmm. There really is nothing wrong with that if it works for you. Unfortunately, it sounds like it's not working for you.
Well, I have a problem this morning, and it's something that happens a lot, especially this morning, like what I was doing. I was using my picture publishing program and just doing a little ditty in there. And lots of times when I use that program, I get a little box that comes up halfway through doing whatever I'm doing. It says WAOL has caused an error in something.
Cassie, if we can just interrupt you for a second, though, one thing that you didn't mention, are you running any antivirus software?
Yeah, Norton, I think it is.
And you've updated it recently?
No. But it's been doing it ever since I got the computer. I've always gotten those little boxes.
Yeah. You should definitely upgrade your antivirus software regularly. But what version of AOL are you running?
An older one. I think it's 5, maybe?
There were some notorious problems with 5.
Right.
You truly need to update. How much memory do you have? Okay. It's our job to ask questions you can't answer. That's why we don't take your last name or show your face. We're on radio.
Sorry that I don't have the right answer for your question.
No, it's entirely all right. But if you only have 64 meg of RAM.
I think I have more than that. Is there like 128?
128? Excellent.
Yeah.
That's better.
Okay.
It's not magnificent, but it's better.
Well, that's kind of what came with it, right?
Yes. You can upgrade that if you need to.
I don't do a whole lot with it. I use the Internet, and I do some stuff for school, but, I'm not, like, doing
that
major
projects. That actually is a whole lot these days.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay.
It is. What you want to do is look into updating to the newest version of AOL. That will solve a lot of problems you're having.
Well, you know what? When it runs out in just, like, a little bit here, I want to get off it anyway.
Yeah.
So I've just kind of stayed with it because I had a lot of...
Yeah, because it came with a system.
We've also been hearing
problems.
I'm
going to get rid of it as soon as it's up, so...
We've been hearing about problems with AOL 7 and ME.
That's right.
One issue that happens is AOL will update their revision level. So you might have version 5.0 revision 19.
Yep.
You know, a version 5.0 revision 22 might work better for you.
But Cassie, basically that's just Steve being Steve.
Well,
basically, if you're finding that AOL is causing you problems,
is that little box? What is this WAOL? Does that mean it's something with AOL?
Yeah, it's the Windows AOL basic core. core program that runs everything else.
I see. Well, can I tell you kind of what happened to me? Because I'm stuck right now.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so I was in that picture publishing thing, and lots of times when I use that, I get that box all the time. I don't know if it just doesn't like that program on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm living on the Internet, so I don't know why it didn't like it, but it didn't. So anyways, I was done with what I was doing, so I just figured when that box came up, I just usually close it out, and it gives me my desktop back, and I just start again.
Right.
So that's what I did. And then when I got my desktop back, I wanted to go on the Internet for a minute. So I logged on. It put me on. And then I hit one of my favorite sites. And the minute I did that, I got another one of those WAOL boxes.
Right.
So I thought, oh, all right, I'll just close it out and start again, you know, log on again.
No.
And it wouldn't close out. And
you've
I've never had one of them. It wouldn't close out.
Right. Once that happens, you've got to restart the machine.
Well, so that's what I did, though. I went to this. So I couldn't close it out, so I was stuck with the box, and I didn't know what to do, so I just went to the start button, and I hit start, close the computer, shut down the computer, and so it did, and I figured, okay, now I'll just do the whole thing again and get back online, only now I'm staring at a dark screen with a little flashing white cursor in the left-hand top corner.
It won't boot at all now.
Right. What you've got to do, sometimes when you hit the reset, it won't really reset. What I would recommend is if there's a switch on the back or pull the power plug out of the back of the machine.
Not out of the wall unit?
Either one.
Either one.
I can just unplug the computer, you're saying.
Yeah. Unplug it and replug it in. Sometimes
wait about 10, 15 seconds before you plug it back in.
Okay, I just pulled the plug.
All right, let it set for a few seconds, and then when you plug it back in, it will spin everything back up. A number of machines have that problem. Trying to restart, and they get halfway, and then all of a sudden you just see the cursor flashing in the upper left-hand corner.
Especially if you're trying to restart during after a crash.
I'm so, unsure about what to do with things, that when I saw that happen, I just didn't want to do one more dumb thing.
No, that's the best thing you can do at this point. I'm afraid, Cassie, we have to take a break. We're going to go. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave, Steve, Nick, Rob on 1180 WHAM Soundbites.
On News Radio 1180 WHAM.
And before you write in, yes, we know contact isn't a verb. We're here talking to Bob from Fairport. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I use Windows. Well, actually, I'm trying to get my 56K modem to work. Got a USR, Courier, V, everything. It worked great with Windows 95, and then I upgraded Windows 98, and I can only get a 26.4 out of it.
Hold on, Bob.
Yep.
Is this the same phone line that you use for your modem?
The one I'm talking to you on now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm on a cell phone right now.
You're on the worst cell phone I have ever heard in my life. I have to be totally honest with you. You're breaking up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. Should I call back some other time?
No. Now you sound better.
Yeah.
All right. We're jumping from phone to phone there.
Okay. Super.
Okay. Start over?
Yeah, no, we got that you're in a 56K modem and you can't get better than 28.8.
Okay,
since you upgraded to 98.
It worked on Windows 95, doesn't work on 98 SE. I found out that there were problems with USR and Windows 98, so I borrowed a friend's Zoom modem.
Yeah.
And it, same thing, doesn't work.
One thing that could have been happening is in the old OS, it might have been falsely reporting the speed.
Yeah.
What sometimes the modems report isn't the modem-to-modem speed, it's the computer-to-modem speed. So it says, ooh, 56K connection. If it says 56K, it is definitely wrong because there are legal limits of 53K.
The Shannon limit is 53K, and it's not legal, it's a physical limit.
Yeah.
It's physics. Physics always wins. It's in the Shannon limit for modems is 56K. 53.
Okay, one thing I've done is I've gone on to look at the do the speed tests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can get like 21 up, 23 down kind of numbers. Is that?
Well, what did you get with the old modem?
I never tried it with the old modem.
Right. Here's the reality. The speed you get out of your modem is entirely dependent on your phone lines. Your phone line, it used to be that phone lines was, do you remember the old party line concept where multiple people shared a phone line?
Right.
Well, young.
We're too young.
You're young.
Oh, get out of here.
That's back, only they do it electronically now through something called a SLIC, a subscriber line interface concentrator. And what they do is they take up to 23 or 4 phone lines and electronically converge them into one line and give everybody a slice of that time. So if you're the only person on your SLIC, you're going to get something closer to your 53K Shannon limit. If there are a whole bunch of people talking at the same time, then you're your line gets slower and slower and slower and slower until the point where you get cut right off. So you may find that at 4 o'clock in the morning, you're blazing along at your 53K, and or anyway, close to it. And then, you know, at 9 o'clock at night when everybody's online on the phone or online themselves, then you get a lousy connection.
There's also issues with the brand of modem your ISP may have.
Yeah.
Right. Some brands just don't like other brands for no apparent reason. So in one time you could dial in and get one brand of modem, and another time you dial in and get a different brand.
And
because most of them have 200 or 300 modems.
Oh, right. Thanks. And the next thing that's important is that you have the latest updated drivers for your modem. If you have a courier modem and you borrowed somebody else's Zoom modem and didn't change the drivers, you're definitely not going to get better performance.
No.
Yep, no, it did all that. I've tried that.
And again, Nick, like Nick said, it can all go back to the phone line. That's bottom line what it equates to.
Is like the 2123K, I mean, in a, you know, busy period of time, is that reasonable?
I've seen people down to 8K.
Okay.
You know, so 21K is not bad when it's busy.
Well, hello, I was down to 1,200 baud at my business.
Yeah.
Just because of line noise, and I am so close to the switching station that I can go up and rap on the wall.
So when you bang it, you get a little better.
But apparently, right. Yeah. I'm sorry, Bob, but that's, you know, phone lines are what they are.
You might want to look into a higher speed service as well.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. It's been a 2-month quest, and now I'll stop.
There you go. Yeah. Our next call, we got a couple minutes left. Dan from Marion. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Gotta love Verizon. 5852 people doesn't work. I've got a Dell computer, a HP DeskCheck 895 CXI. All of a sudden, in the middle of this week, it started banding when printing. Colors aren't coming out correctly. I've changed both cartridges. Still the same thing. Any ideas?
What did you do before this started? What did you change?
Nothing.
What it sounds like has happened is that something has changed the driver.
Yep.
Either it got corrupted by something or replaced when you installed another program. What I would suggest you do is go to HP's website and download their latest driver for your operating system for your printer. Make sure you get exactly the right one.
And if your printer has a hardware internal test print, try that. If it still gets the banding, then there's something physically wrong with the printer.
Exactly.
Yep.
And we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray and Rob Linton on the buttons. If you need to call, I apologize to everybody we didn't get to. You can give us a call next Friday night at 7 o'clock on our news on Time Warner Cable. And we'll be back here next Saturday at 12:20 p.m. on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. God bless America.